Hi, this is Tony Ruggiero here, and you're listening to my Tour Coach Podcast. Tour Coach Podcasts come from my stories, the interviews, my roundtable discussions, the day-to-day interaction with the people that I teach in my journey in the game of golf, whether it's tour players that I teach or tour players that have fired me, or heck, it's other teachers that I think the world of and respect, or it's mental coaches, performance coaches, or hey, maybe it's just people that have made an indelible mark on my teaching. Whatever it is, I hope this helps you learn more about the playing, the teaching, or enjoying the great game of golf. I sure as heck have fun doing this. I hope you all enjoy listening to it. We've got great sponsors. We've always got great guests. And one thing that we for sure do here on the Tour Coach is we keep it real. None of this is scripted. This is just authentic. This is the discussions and the day-to-day interactions that we have as the dew sweepers and teaching and trying to help all of you play better golf. And look, if you enjoy our instruction and you're somebody wanting to get better, why don't you come see us and get help for your game with our world-famous retreats, which are going to be at Old Palm Golf Club in Palm Beach Gardens with my good friends Mark Hackett, Dan Terleski, Colby Touye, Dr. Greg Carton, and a host of many, many more. Or you can come see me at my studio in Mobile, Alabama, or at the Preserve Golf Club. And remember, everything you need to play better golf is always going to be available for you at dewsweepersgolf.com. You can find out where I am and how to be on a podcast if you go there. Enjoy this edition of The Tour Coach. Welcome into the Tour Coach. Joining me now here, sitting on the tee here, the Tour Coach, is my good friend Josh Gregory. The idea for doing, I've been wanting to do this, Josh, for a while, and then just happened to run into you walking with you out there at Sanderson Farms. You obviously walked a little better than me. Your guy played amazing, won the tournament, but wanted to bring you on. We get so many, like, it's amazing to me from doing this. When I quit doing the radio, started doing this, like, how many teachers listen to this damn thing, and how many, I'm old school. Who the hell is going to listen to me ramble for 30 minutes? But, you know, teachers and, like, people that are want to be really good players, I want to first talk about, like, your journey to getting to where you are. And before we started this, you talked about your passion a little bit for juniors, because that's something I really want to do, is bring you in, because it's my passion, too. In fact, first time I was around you was, I think, at that tournament in Mexico. You had your college team down there. I was down there following Bob Wyatt and Robbie Shelton. And, you know, so I have the same passion. Love teach. I'd rather teach those probably than tour players, and want to get you down. Talk about your journey through the college ranks to where you are now, and we'll just kind of go from there.
Well, first of all, I appreciate you having me on. I love doing this. And thanks for the friendship and support and all those good things. But, you know, that's where my roots come from. Played college golf at SMU and tried to play professionally a little bit, and realized after 2 years that I wasn't quite good enough. As I've always said, I believed I was half as good as I really was, and I try to get my players to believe they're twice as good as they really are. So usually you don't have to get tour players to believe they're twice as good as they really are, but that's the reason their name's on the bag. But anyway, the only thing I knew I wanted to do was coach. And I thought I could do it. I thought, man, what a cool job. And didn't know what it entailed as far as being a college golf coach. I just thought that would be something that I could be good at or truly enjoy. And was very fortunate. I spent 2 years at NC State working under the great Richard Sykes, who just passed away this past week, unfortunately. But he was my mentor in coaching. He taught me everything about how to treat people and gave me so many life lessons. And as he told me one of my first days on the job, he said, look, Josh, he said, there's nothing better in this world than to be called coach. When a kid picks up the phone 20 years later and says, hey, coach, how are you doing? And I've lived by those words. And he said, look, if you put your players first, you take care of them, you do everything in the world to make their job easy, all they got to do is swing a club. And that's what I've tried to live by, whether that's coaching at the collegiate level or whether that's now working with some of the best players in the world. And the same theory applies. So I was fortunate enough to coach 12 years as a head coach, 9 years at Augusta State, where we were fortunate enough to win back-to-back national championships in 2010-11. Patrick Reed and Hendrick Norlander were on my teams, and that was pretty amazing to be one of the little guys beating up on Oklahoma State and Georgia and that whole crowd. So that was a dream come true. You dream of winning one, and never two, and never back-to-back. So that was the highlight of my college coaching career, and then went back to my alma mater at SMU and coached there for 3 years. And Coach Bryson DeChambeau and Austin Smotherman and Harry Hicks and that crowd.
Pretty good group.
Pretty darn good group. So we turned the program around pretty fast and had a chance to win got beat by Alabama in the quarterfinals in my final year there and came close to win another national championship. So after that, decided to go out, you know, went out on my own and said, hey, I want to see if I can do this. And, you know, things didn't necessarily end at SMU the way I wanted them to end. But you know what, I learned a great lesson from that and basically said, look, you know, you can't take away my passion and my ability to hopefully make players better and make a difference. And I sure didn't know I would wind up doing this today, helping, you know, some of the best players in the world. But as we've talked about, it's still the same. You know, guys, the best want to be coached and the best want to be led in the right direction. And I've taken the same kind of same model and same theories that I had in college coaching and obviously learned a lot, but it's still, you know, love the kids first, coach them second. And that's where the career's kind of taken off.
Yeah, I love that. And you know, especially the part about nothing better than being called coach, because I, you know, that was important what you said there. And I mean, it is. I still, like, you know, all these kids that, you know, they're coming to work with us and the first thing, you know, they call you coach. And, you know, I remember, you know, when we were doing stuff at Frederica, we'd bus these kids in because, you know, there aren't that many kids living at Frederica.
No.
So we'd bus them in. We'd bring a caravan of kids. And I remember Bill Harmon said to me once, like, man, that was neat watching all those kids come off the bus or the van and hug you know, and be glad they're there. And as you know, like, it's just so fun watching, like, these guys you've watched grow up, like going to Tom Lovelady's wedding last week, watching him from the stuff that happened to him play and then playing college golf and pro and then get married. It's like, it's so different than what people think. Like, to me, the personal connection is so important, and it's so much more to me important than X's and O's, like, the information.
It's everything. I think we're both relationship driven people, and you know, I've coached a lot of players, and relationship is first. If the relationship's not there, it's just not going to work. And, you know, I'm sure not that smart, but I've tried to figure out that, look, there's a certain type of player that I can work with and that I can have success with, and it's not for everybody, but that's, you know, I don't do very well with very independent, very candidly kind of non-needy players. I like to be needed. I like to be wanted. I like to be called coach, and that works really well for me. I'm not very good at the business side of things, but I love to coach and I love the relationships. And that's, you know, it's probably a little bit of addiction as we both know, it's 24/7. If you want to be good at this job, and it's something that, you know, we make a lot of sacrifices and sometimes put ahead of our family and all those other things, but it's, there's no greater reward than that thank you or that hug or that nice note or whatever when a kid or a tour player or whatever has success. And it doesn't even mean wins. That just means, you know, getting better. And that's why we do this. And, you know, it's nice to be recognized for success. It's not, it can be a really cool way to live, but those notes and those hugs and those thank yous are what it's all about.
So when we were walking down, I think it was like 6 or 7 up there at Sanderson, you talked about how you were simple, right? You were simple we were talking about some different teaching, and I'm obviously very simple. And sometimes, like, I get criticized for being too simple. What are your thoughts?
That's a compliment, by the way.
Oh, I know. And it's jealousy, right? So you've been around so many great players, coaching in college. I mean, the ones you listed and out there on tour. How many of them that are the best really try to make it more complicated? I don't know that many that try to. I mean, I know there's a couple that, you know, you were around Bryson. I mean, maybe Bryson might be outliers, right? But, like, the majority of really, really great players that I've been around seem like they want stuff more simplified. Am I wrong on that?
No, you're 100% correct. And look, they whether it's a high-end junior or a high-end college player or tour player, I mean, as always, use the line, these guys got their name on their bag for a reason. You know, they didn't make it to the PGA Tour, you know, because of me. My job is to help them identify kind of what their DNA is, what makes them tick, what makes them click, what makes them, you know, who they are, and to keep them in those lanes. And that's I've got so many stories where we've all tried too hard as coaches to try to do too much, to try to, you know, whether it's proving our worth or whether it's just trying to make guys better, that we actually wind up screwing things up. And so I've really tried to stay in my lane. You know, Butch Harmon gave me great advice when I was a college coach, and he says, you know, says, Josh, to be good in this business, when you say something, you better say it with conviction. And if you don't know the answer, you better be okay with saying, I don't know. Basically, you better know when to say something, when to shut up. And I've tried to live by that. And it's hard sometimes because we want to help so badly and we want to make a difference. And sometimes we're better off just not saying a word. And, you know, I still struggle with this at times. I've been helping Will Zalatoris for about 3 years and really have seen, you know, the transformation from a kid that didn't have any status to being one of the best players in the world. And, you know, we had a deal earlier this year, right before the Byron Nelson, right before he almost wins the PGA, where we spent 3 straight days in Dallas getting ready for the Byron Nelson and getting ready for the PGA. And we spent 3 hours a day putting. Now, do you know how crazy that is to spend 3 hours a day putting? Do you know how bad that is for your back? How bad that is for your mental stability? I mean, what are you going to do in 3 hours? But we right. were trying. We were reinventing the wheel. We were. He was, you know, did feel good about things, although he was trending in the right direction. We just kept trying and trying and trying. And sure enough, he goes to Byron Nelson. He probably has his worst putting week in his PGA Tour career. It was about -8 strokes gained putting for two rounds, and still only missed the cut by one shot. And he calls me on that Saturday. After he missed the cut, and I was out watching my other guys play, and you could tell he was lost, and I felt bad because I did a bad job. And I said, all right, well, just stop where you are, and I'm going to head to see. And he was practicing at the time. I said, all right, I'm leaving here. I'll come. We're going to figure this out. So first things, I get there, and I apologize to him. I said, hey, that's on me. That's my fault. You hired me to lead the way, and I did a bad job of leading the way. We overtried. We overdid things. We got away from our blueprint for what always works. We pulled up some old footage of the times he's putted the best. We simply looked at his posture, looked at his setup, recognized a couple things that were off. We putted for about 15 minutes, had a margarita, and we left. So that's what, to me, was needed. We literally putted for 15 minutes, had a margarita, and said, we're going to go get after it, and this is our blueprint for what we're going to do until prove it otherwise. Well, since then, we haven't had a putting session over an hour. Since then, and that's we've stuck to the same plan, the same routine. We identify the same things day in and day out. So that's just kind of proof of being simple. That we all want to learn, we all want to get better, we all want to try too hard, and that's why I was never any good, never as good as I should have been as a player. I simply tried too hard, and I know that it sounds crazy because we always talk about working hard, working hard, working hard. Well, I'd rather see guys work effectively. Let's work effectively. There's a big difference between working hard and working effectively. That's why I'm such a plan, you know, as my label as a performance coach or whatever I'm labeled as, coach, teacher, performance coach, whatever. You got to think of something smart to say. So performance coach sounded pretty cool. So anyway, it's my job is to give these guys a plan. My job is to give these guys a plan, hold them accountable. Henrik Norlander told me this once. He's like a second son to me, and it was a brilliant, brilliant quote. I really didn't think about it at the time, but it really hits home now. He said, "Coach," he said, "when I'm on tour and I'm playing and I'm struggling, that's when I need you the least." And I go, "What? That doesn't make any sense." And I'm like, "What are you talking about?" And he goes, "That's when I need you the least." He goes, "I'll figure it out. I'll dig it out of the dirt. I'll figure it out, and I know what makes it work for me. And yeah, I need you, but I don't need you that much during those times. I need you when things are going really well. Because when things are going well, I need you to hold me accountable, make me do the boring stuff, the little stuff that I don't want to do. Because I think I got it." Now, that's brilliant.
That is
really
brilliant.
Think about that.
That's for every damn level of player. Like,
yeah.
Everybody listening to you ought to write that down.
Yeah, it's amazing, though, because when these guys are so good, they'll figure it out. And honestly, they don't want to listen to you talk when they're struggling. Give them something simple. Give them what you think is the best fix or the best way to get better and leave them alone. They'll dig it out of the dirt. When things are good, they need you. And you got to hold them accountable what makes them work. You got to identify their DNA, much like on that putting green with Will Zalatoris. We identified where his grip was. We identified where the ball position was, where his setup was. And we had a margarita and we left. That was it. That was what was needed that day. And next thing you know, he goes to the PGA and almost wins, and then he almost wins the U.S. Open, wins in Memphis, and bam, 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 here we go, and we're really heading in the right direction. So there's just so many stories of that, and I think I shared with you a story of Adam Long, one of my other guys at Sea Island one year, and he had he had finished second the previous week at Mayakoba. Led the tour that week in total ball striking, which was pretty impressive for a guy that didn't hit it that far, which is hard to do, as you know, with these stats. They're very skewed toward distance. So we're in Sea Island, and the first day he shoots 73, plays poorly. It's windy, it's cold, it's whatever. He's hitting flip hooks out there all day, flip hooks all day. So we get on the range afterwards, and he looks at me and he says, hits his first ball and hits a little flip hook and goes, "What do you see?" And I didn't say a word. Hits another ball. "What do you see?" And each time this tone's getting stronger and stronger and stronger. And I said, and I still didn't say a word. Finally hits another hook out there and he goes, What do you F and C? And I said, "Bud, what do you see?" And he looked at me and he gave me this little, shit-eating grin and looked at me like, just, shut up, man, because I know what you're trying to say. But he wanted a lesson. The whole point is he wanted a golf lesson at that point. He didn't need a golf lesson. He knows right. what causes the hang back flip hook. If he doesn't know that, then we've done a very poor job at communicating. We've done a bad job in preparation. So he knew the fix. He wanted me to give him something else, and I wasn't going to give him something else. He knew he needed to feel a cut, or he needed to cover it, or whatever our feel was exactly that day. He knew what he needed to do. But it was hard in those times, as you say, to keep simple. We want to fix, we want to help, but you got to keep simple.
Don't you think one of the hardest things is, and I've been fired, I've kept my job for doing the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And I've been fired for doing the right thing, right? Where, like, there's times I know where I've known earlier on, like, I would say that with Smiley. Like, there were times that, like, the real answer was, we don't need to search. Like, I don't need to come up with anything different, right? But I went ahead and I wasn't confident enough, like, in myself, or hadn't been out there long enough, or whatever the case. Hell, I don't know. Maybe I need the money. But, whatever. Right? And, but that wasn't the right thing. But then there's times down the road where, a guy's like, "Oh, there's got to be something I need to open the face more." No, you don't. The problem is you just haven't putted as good as you did this past year. It's not your ball striking. Or the problem is this and this going on. Right away, but then you stand your ground but it's hard. I think that's one of the tougher things in what we do.
I think it's the hardest thing in what we do, and I think it's because we care so much. For one, I think if we just viewed this as a business, I think it'd be a lot easier. But that's not who we are, and that's not who I am. And I wear my heart on my sleeve, and I get I'm living and dying on every shot out there. It's led to some of my success as a college coach. And now I think that's why the guys that I have love me as their coach, is that they know I care. They know I'm just as into it as they are. Yeah, there's obviously a financial benefit to it, but that's really not that big of a motivator to me. Yeah. I mean, to see a guy like Mackenzie Hughes, who just got, didn't get picked for the President's Cup, and we just started working about 3 months ago, and to see him really buy into some simplicity and buy into some changes that we made in his golf swing and his ball flight, and to see that pay off, and to see his family run out on the green, and to see him win the tournament in Jackson, that's why we do it. He could have, should have won the golf tournament, whether he ever met me or not, who knows? But at the same time, to be a small part of that, and to give him a little bit of a plan and give him some information that is going to help him get better, without using a ton of technology and fancy words, and honestly, maybe 3 or 4 videos. I mean, really not that much. Just simply, "Hey man, you're way under the plane. You're passed way too far out to the right. You're hitting up on it way too much. Let's hit some drivers off the deck. Show me if you can do that." And he couldn't do it at first. Well, he figured it out. Well, what does that do? That got his angle of attack better. That got his all those big fancy words better. It got his path better. Next thing you know, he's able to actually start cutting the golf ball, which is what he said he wanted to do. Well, it wasn't rocket science. We threw a pole out there in front of him, a alignment rod, and I said, "Cut it around this. Figure
Come
it
on,
out."
That stuff will never work. Come on now.
No way that'll never work. But that's these guys are really good, and they're really simple, and it amazes me. I mean, we talked a little bit about this. I mean, I've been fortunate enough to help some of the best players in the world, and I remember helping first. I worked with Jason Kokrak for about a year and a half, and that was a year he kind of broke through and made it to the Tour Championship, and obviously had won a few times since then, and I remember showing him some shots around the greens and you know, showing him a little, like a little draw bump shot to when you're kind of chipping it through the Bermuda grass and chase it up to the green, how you need to feel like it's a little bit more of a draw so it doesn't have as much backspin on it, so it doesn't just grab into the Bermuda. And he looked at me and he goes, "How do you know this?" And I'm thinking, well, how do you not know this? You're one of the best players in the world. But it's just, these guys hit it so dang good and they're so talented and they just do all the things that you and I could never dream of. But you show them these little things, these little old school nuggets, this little old school shot or something that can just save them. Maybe it may be one shot a year. Who knows? Who knows what it may be? But that to me is the difference of them becoming, you know, a nice PGA Tour player to one of the best in the world. You know, showing Mackenzie Hughes how to hit a driver off the deck. You know, without giving him a whole lot of information, just saying, "Hey man, what would you have to do if you had to hit this off the deck?" "Well, I better get Steve on it. I better learn to cut it." "Well, okay,
yeah,
well, do it." And there's our plan. I mean, he and I talked right before we went to Japan. I said, "Look, we're still on the overdoing side of things. We've got to still overcut. You know, we're training at, you know, I don't use a lot of numbers. It sounds like I do, but I don't. You know, on TrackMan terms, we're training at -5, -6 path left to try to produce close to zero on the golf course.
Yeah, because only God don't do that.
You're going to go back to your tendencies. It's not ingrained enough. You know, you made a million reps kind of, I don't even like to say the wrong way, but in a different way. So we got to make a million to catch up. So until I think that's the biggest thing that I can try to get. You know, I wish I had done this or when I played it. You can't be afraid to overdo things in training and practice, regardless of whether that's full swing, chipping, putting. Overdo the feels, because to change something an inch, you've got to feel like you're changing it at a mile. And that's just something that builds trust when you get out there on the golf course. Because if we just incrementally do it, it's not going to work when we get out there. So it's, you know, that's where the performance stuff comes in. You know, getting guys to do trust drills, getting guys to compete. You know, standing up. One of my favorite drills is standing up. You know, with guys if they're, you know, trying to learn to cut it or trying to draw it or whatever the heck they're working on the golf swing is to simply like a hole at 18 at Sawgrass. I can't wait to take Mackenzie there this spring and see where he is in his game. And we're going to stand there in the practice round and I'm going to make him cut it off the water. Now, he may never hit that shot in tournament, but we've got to learn to do that in practice so therefore it can transfer over to competition. That will be the true sign to take your technical feels and be able to actually incorporate them on the golf course and take them into trust drills.
Yeah, you said something else. We were talking about some players that you were talking about. You know, I thought it was interesting the way you were like analyzing the short game of a really good player and about how you got to be careful. Sometimes you put stuff in there that doesn't affect their full swing and so forth. And understanding, like, I thought that was brilliant because, like, you have to understand, like, the player. Like, if the player's a great ball striker, they don't have to become Seve. Right.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, I thought that was really good because I see, you know, folks that are, you know, like college kids and they, you know, they're great. They're really good ball strikers. And man, and then they go and they'll I got to get way better short game. And they go to somebody that puts in all this crazy stuff. I'm not saying it's fundamentally wrong.
Right.
I'm just saying it doesn't match what they do. Right. And then and not understand, like, you made the point. I mean, you only got to get up and down two times around, right?
At that level, yes. You don't need,
right.
You know, we don't need to reinvent the wheel here.
Yeah. Well, I thought that was fascinating, though.
Well, if you look at it, I mean, as a coach, whether, you know, about of my, you know, eight guys that I coach on tour, I say all of them, I work on short game and putting and performance and practice, wedging, all that stuff. The scoring aspect, about half of them I work with their full swing. So whatever, our job is to make, it's what a coach does. The coach makes somebody better. When people say, "What do you do?" I say, "Well, I try to make guys better." That's my job description. But I try to match up, you know, most of the time it's guys coming to me for some short game help. And I try to match up what they do great in their full swing with their pitching, chipping, bunker, et cetera. Because ultimately at the end of the day, short game is a defense mechanism. Short game is something when we're not hitting it well, we need to have the ability to get the basic ones up and down, so therefore we can hang in there, go to the range, figure it out, and go hit it better the next day. It's also, you know, it can be a little bit of offense as well. When we're hitting it great, well, that short game can even showcase how good we're hitting it, and then those are the days we shoot 60, 64, 65. So, you know, when I'm working with a player, 99% of my short game stuff is working on basic pitching. I don't care about getting the hard ones up and down. I care about getting the momentum keepers up and down, getting the ones from 5 yards off the green to a basic hole location, the little medium spinners, as I call them, or the little low running shots, getting the basic ones up and down, because those are the ones that are going to keep you in it. The hard ones, you hit the 10 or 12 feet and you try to make a putt and you move on, but I don't really care about those. Basic pitching, basic chipping requires sound technique. Hard chips require guts, feel, imagination, a little bit of luck, all those things. So when working with a player, I mean, you know, a couple examples of that. I mean, Mackenzie Hughes right off the top of my head. I mean, we're building his full swing off of his chipping motion, which is kind of the opposite. He's a very wide, very pivoting with his chipping. He's got probably the best basic chipper in the world. It's incredible at how good he is around the greens on just basic, simple shots. He uses his core, very little hands, very pivot-oriented, and is an amazing chipper. Well, he doesn't really do that in his golf swing, so that we're trying to build his golf swing off after what he does great. Kind of the opposite of that would be Victor Hovland. I've helped Victor off and on with his short game, and he's one of the best ball strikers in the world. He's got an extremely strong club face, super rotational, holds it off, beautiful. Just hits, you know, just bullets out there. Well, as always, it's been well noted that he's struggled in a short game. Obviously, a strong club face is not the ideal matchup for somebody with an elite short game. I mean, you look at Patrick Reed. Open place, a little bit of cupped at the top, a lot of hands, amazing around the greens. Never been regarded as one of the, you know, as the best ball striker, but obviously very, very good when he's on. But
right,
that's not the best matchup for being a great ball striker. Most great ball strikers have strong club faces and fast bodies, and they rotate. So with Victor, he'd tried to do some things, whether it's on his own or with some other help, of trying to really open the club face in the backswing, really learn to use the bounce, throw the club head through impact, all these things that were not wrong. They're 100% textbook by the book if you were just teaching a model short game, but they were a bad matchup for what he does really well. Look, this guy, as I said, this guy's one of the best ball strikers in the world. At most, he's going to chip it 2 to 3 times a day. So why are we trying to build something that might actually creep into his full swing and start affecting the way he hits the golf ball? So, you know, my advice to him was we simply tried to pattern it off of what he does really well in his full swing. We got his weight a little bit more left. We played around with the club face at address, opened it up more at address, knowing that he's going to shut it in the backswing, but I didn't really care. Learning to chip with his pivot, learning to match up his, you know, the way he releases, the way he moves through impact in the full swing with what he does in his chipping motion to try to move the low point forward. Didn't worry about his club face. Didn't worry about those things. So, again, just trying to make solid contact, get some confidence, get some trust, and then build from there. Over time, if we continue to work or whatever, yeah, we'll add some more shots. We'll probably add a little bit of release to the club face. But at the same time, he doesn't have to be an elite chipper. He just has to be solid.
Right. That's, you know, I always used to say that with Lucas Glover, you know, the 5 years we were together, like, man, like, you know, and, you know, our goal, I thought, like, in when he made the tour championship in 19, my goal going that year was to make him better around the, you know, get better up and down, you know, scrambling. And it, you know, going into the playoffs, he was in the top 10, which I thought was phenomenal, right?
It's amazing. Yeah.
And all we did was get his weight forward. And we had this drill we would do where he rolled the spikes on his right shoe off the ground. And he just tried to leave them off the ground going through the ball, right?
Love it.
You know, but it was like my thought was the same thing. Like, it, you know, and I always felt like the momentum killers are those easy ones that they don't get up and down. Like those ones right in front of the green where they've just mishit it, and it's like a 25-foot, 30-foot chip, and they hit it to 5 feet instead of where you just tap it in. You know, like,
100%.
And my thought, like, just get good, because they're so good if you get the low point in the right place and he's got a great pivot. Like, man, like, just get those basic ones up and down, because, like, you're a good ball striker. You're not going to hit it in that many shitty spots.
No. You better not.
Right.
Then you fire your caddy and your coach.
Correct.
If you start doing that. But no, it's just not again, I do a ton of games, a ton of drills. I call them kick in games, footage games, to where I always say the best pitchers in the world, they chip the basic ones to tap in. So they can go tap it in, they go drink water on the side of the green, they chill out before the next hole. They chip the medium ones to 4 to 6 feet, which gives them, you know, an 85% chance of making that putt. Then they chip the hard ones to 8 to 12 feet, which gives them, you know, 40 to 50% chance of making the putt. That's what they do. They don't chip the basic ones to 5-6 feet. They just take stress off their game, and that's, you know, my number one job when it's working around the greens is to build a technique, build a sound enough system to where they can get the basic ones up and down. If you look at Will Zalatoris, one of the freak ball striker, right? Maybe the best, arguably the best in the world. You know, there's two or three things we've identified in his game that are going to help him become the best player in the world. Obviously, we continue to work on putting, making those 4 to 6 foot putts are extremely important, which he's gotten really good at. Stats can be very deceiving. He obviously gets criticized for his putting, and sometimes it doesn't look real pretty. We know that, but it goes in the hole. It goes in, and if stats on the PGA Tour counted all the majors last year, he would have been a top 50 putter on the PGA Tour. So stats can be very, very deceiving. So it may not look pretty, but as he said at the Masters last year, he said if anybody wants to go to that putting green and putt, we can go do that if y'all like. So he's not afraid, and it's getting better. But you know, we've identified, you know, the basic chipping. He's a guy that hits it freakishly good. Well, he's going to and he plays terribly smart. He's one of the smartest golfers I've ever been around. Almost plays. I don't like to use the word conservative because that's not the case. But you know, I'm trying to learn to get him to put the pedal down a little bit more when he plays. Get his wedge proximity a little bit closer. But you know what? That's why he. But again, as a coach, I've got to be careful with that because that's what makes him play so well in big time golf tournaments, in major championships, because he plays so smart. So to get him to play the Byron Nelson, you know, recklessly and carefree and whatever, that's going to hurt his performance in the long term in big time events. And he's told me from day one, I want to win major championships. That's my goal. The rest will fall into play.
Probably not the guy going to win out in the desert, right? Where it's just blowing it at every, right? Like, I mean, that's not his game. You take
it. It's not his game. Now
he's going to be in that all the whole way.
It's crazy. I was watching him play Victor Hovland this year in the match play at Austin, and he gave him the first hole, and he's got about 100 yards in, and he hits his flag's back left, and you can't miss it. A foot left of his flag, it runs off the green, and sure enough, he hit it right at the flag, about a foot left of it, it spins off the green, and I was literally in shock because I haven't seen him make that kind of mistake in 3 years.
Right.
I was like, what is this kid doing? Has he lost it? No, but in all seriousness, that's how. You know, you see that every day out there. But from this young man, I never saw that. I just never see him beat himself. He never gives holes away. He never gives, you know, bogeys away. He just, if he drives it out of play, he finds a way to get it back in play, and he makes a bogey and moves on. And that's why he's so good, you know, in major championships and in big boy golf terms. And that's why we're working on the little things, working on his distance wedging, working on his basic up and downs. If you look at his chipping technique over the past couple of years, it's been totally changed. He used to be a big leaner and hinger, and now he's wide to wide, basically just to get the easy ones up and down. His bunker play, working on basic bunker shots, because he's going to miss it in the right spots.
Yeah, for sure. Josh, this has been awesome. First of all, you've done a hell of a job with all those guys, and it's been fun to watch your journey from when I saw you and met you in college to now, and it's been fun to be able to walk along with you and chat with you. And this was some great stuff. This was great info. I learned as much as anybody. Keep up all the great stuff, and I'll look forward to walking with you soon.
Sounds good, buddy. I appreciate it. Keep up the great work, and we'll keep trying to make people better.
We'll do it. All right, Coach. Take care, buddy.
Thanks, bud.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Tour Coach. I want to take a minute and thank Cordy Walker and Golf Science Lab, as well as my sponsors Strixon, Buick, Bushnell, and Vineyard Vines for helping make all of this possible and helping me share my insights with you. If you like what you've heard, why don't you check out more on the Dew Sweepers channel on YouTube, as well as the Dew Sweeper on Instagram, or go to dewsweepersgolf.com to find out more about my teaching, my travels, and where you can find out more about me.